Welcome to Indie Folk, New Art and Sounds of the Pacific Northwest, an exhibition at the Museum of Craft and Design in San Francisco. We're so glad you're here to enjoy the art, either on-site or online. This abbreviated guide is an invitation to get to know just a little bit about some of the artists and their work. If you want a more immersive guide with longer image descriptions and more details about the exhibition and the artists, please visit sfmcd.org/exhibitions/indie-folk. Welcome. Here's a little bit about the exhibition. Indie Folk features pieces by 17 artists from the Pacific Northwest and includes paintings, baskets, quilts, photography, video, and sculptures. They come from rural and working class traditions, and most were created in the last decade. To create a unique, immersive experience, we've curated a playlist of Pacific Northwest music to enjoy in the gallery. These songs were recorded between 1975 and 2018 by working class musicians from the region, and we hope that pairing folk art with folk music brings Pacific Northwest art to life. For anyone who prefers to experience a quieter exhibition, noise-canceling headphones and earplugs are available at the front desk. Indie Folk will be available to visit on-site from February 24th through June 30th, 2024. While you're here, you can take in artwork that's handmade, unpretentious, and sometimes made with found objects or salvaged materials. The focus is on craft and tradition, and creating art that reflects everyday experience rather than emphasizing rigid rules or studio techniques. Now here's the exhibition and gallery layout. The gallery space is a bright, high-ceilinged hall with a polished cement floor and dividing walls that are positioned to suit each exhibition. Some artworks are in the open, while others are mounted or in cases against the walls. Low-hanging rows of track lights illuminate everything from a few feet overhead. The artworks of Indie Folk are the first to be encountered as you enter the gallery space. In the open, on a low platform, are three megalithic-inspired wood carvings by Vince Skelly. Beyond them, against the museum wall on the right, are pieces by Marita Dingus and Brian Beck. A dividing wall partially traverses between the left and right walls of the museum, which can be rounded in either direction. Hanging on it is a large fabric freeway exit sign, and continuing left along the dividing wall, another quilt by Whiting Tennis. Before you make the sharp right around the end of this wall to consider the other side, note that a few steps on, against the left-hand wall of the museum, is one of three benches for resting. Proceeding around the dividing wall, a touchscreen on the other side allows you to select any of 9 songs, which will play through an attached set of headphones, while the entire soundtrack plays through the museum on speakers. In the open, alongside this sound wall is a large, freestanding sculpture by Jessica Jackson Hutchins entitled Mourner. Past the end of this dividing wall and hanging on the right-hand wall of the museum is So What, a painting by Warren Dykman. A second divider intersects the museum wall a few steps left of the painting. Another quilt by Joey Veltkamp hangs on it, and further along, a display of 2 ceramic sculptures also by Hutchins and flanking her mourner piece. Steps ahead, this dividing wall comes to an end roughly in the middle of the gallery space, or, arguably, it makes a short right turn to enclose the neighboring exhibition, Mr. Roboto. But atop a small display directly ahead is Joe Federson's High Voltage Tower. Making the short right turn, a few more Indie Folk pieces decorate the walls and stand in the open here. In the right corner is the entrance to Mr. Roboto. Here's a sampling of 4 pieces. Number 1, Scissor Basket by Marita Dingus. This basket is a collection of different types of metal objects with their own everyday uses that come together with new purpose. The objects are sewn together by metal cables that twist around the various parts, which include the back grille of an oscillating fan, metal netting, and old scissors. The fan's back grille serves as the basket's 3-inch-tall base. At the middle of it is a copper disc with a perfect circle cut out of its center and silvery spokes whose tips are welded close together around the disc's outer edge. The disc floats 1/2 inch off the pedestal it sits on, and a staple base is made by the spokes fanning out and arcing down to touch the pedestal. They then bend and continue up and outward in pairs. They connect at their ends to a shiny circle of metal that's 9 inches around, or about the width of a sheet of paper, and this circle creates the lip of the basket's base. The rest of the sculpture is a cylinder of stiff, thin wire netting that rises up more than twice as high as the base, circling it like a fence. The netting is made of metal strands woven in a loose grid pattern. Where it has become bent, the grid is warped. Like the base, the netting is bright silver but imprecise, scraggly, and torn in places. A stiff metal wire, about as thick as a smartphone charging cable, secures the netting to the base. Long exposure to the outdoors has left this wire dull and dark. Almost evenly spaced around the netting stand five pairs of old children's scissors without rubber grips on the handles, like fence posts. Their blades point up and have spots of rust here and there. The dull, dark wire twists through the scissors' handles to hold them to the ring of the basket's base, and the blades are tied to the netting by very stiff metal wires, some thick, some thin as fishing line. Strands of slender, fully rusted wire are threaded around the netting, providing spots of reddish color. This basket fits into long-standing traditions of basket weaving in the Pacific Northwest, while showcasing that even discarded objects still have meaning and purpose. From the artist's bio, Marita Dingus considers herself an African-American feminist and environmental artist. Her art draws upon relics from the African diaspora. The discarded materials represent how people of African descent were used during the institution of slavery and colonialism, then discarded, but who found ways to repurpose themselves and thrive in a hostile world. Number 2, So What? By Warren Dykeman. This framed acrylic painting features a combination of everyday forms with smears of color, blocky letters, and unexpected color combinations. The main character in So What is a person in silhouette walking toward the right side of the painting on paper that's 5 feet tall and 4 feet across. Capital letters and fat punctuation marks are scattered like clouds. This description will explore the painting in five layers, starting with the background and ending with the main character. The background is pale with wide brushstrokes that deliberately applied paint unevenly. At the top half, the colors are beige, and the bottom is light pink, beige, and white. The next layer uses darker paint and shapes in the top third. On the left, a cloudy white streak, and on the right, arcing bands like sand dunes in gold, salmon pink, and gray. In the next layer are thick muddy brown lines with streaks that get speckly on the ends. At the center third of the paper, a smear runs across like dirt with a post standing straight up on the far left. By the post, more brown lines like a small letter W and a small L with white stripes. Below the dirt, a patch of black with white paint pressed across it until an uneven gray emerged. The next layer up introduces bright colors. To the left of the main character's head, a black W. Below that, a large, vibrant red comma hangs by her right shoulder. The letters A, T, S, and O are in front of the figure. These and the W behind her all have uneven edges, some sharp and jagged, and others rounded. The A and the S are white and encased in a black or gray rectangle like blocks of movable type used in letterpress printing, while the others are free-floating. In front of the figure's face is a bubbly white single quotation mark larger than her head that bumps up against a big dark green apostrophe. Below those, a six-sided geometrical shape with a lemon-yellow center and rings of white, gray, and black hovers next to a super-wide baby blue single quotation mark. Below the blue mark, a five-banded shape like a warped letter M with wide, round humps. And now to the main character painted all in black with gray stripes. While very recognizable as a person, she's abstracted, with no bend in her knees, no left arm, no right hand coming out of her striped cuff, and her right arm hanging down behind her with only a small point of contact to her body, as if it were snapped into place like a doll arm. The edges of her ponytail, face, and ankle-length dress are wavery, their edges like puffy clouds. She wears black and gray striped stockings that match her sleeve cuff, and her loafers have sharp soles like a serrated knife edge. A set of five rectangular windows is cut out of her dress and body. Each is partly filled by black or gray blobs, and the background layers show through. Toward the bottom of her skirt, two gray circles mostly match her stocking and cuff stripes. If read from left to right, the painting says W, A, T, S, O at the top, rather than spelling out the artwork's title, So What? As with the nonchalant tossing of the five letters into the sky, our central character faces the edge of the painting rather than facing front, as in most portraits, as if to say herself, So What? From the artist's bio, Warren Dykeman is interested in the form and contour of the figure and reworking the line, pushing the bounds of what is shape and what is icon. He is informed by folk art, primitive art, and all forms of graphic art, from information design to corporate identity systems. He wants his work to contain an awkwardness that has a rhythm between shape, contrast, color, and inaccuracy. Number 3, High Voltage Tower by Joe Federson. High Voltage Tower is a tightly woven cylindrical basket about the size and shape of a coffee tin, but supple and softer in shape. Alongside another basket of Federson's, it sits under plexiglass atop one of the gallery's square white pedestals. Overall, pale tan fibers alternate with medium brown ones to make up the sides, except for the tall geometric drawings that stretch top to bottom, span nearly to the full width, and repeat around the sides. Composed of parallel and alternating medium and dark brown fibers, the pattern could pass as simply decorative, but for the artwork's title as a hint or guide. With that guidance, the patterns unmistakably depict the giant electrical transmission towers that extend in succession for miles into, out of, and along the Columbia River Gorge where Federson lives and works. They hold aloft high-voltage power lines which, from a distance, seem to drape over them from one to the next, slightly sagging in between. The design of Federson's towers evokes a torso and long legs like a person's, which are spread wide and each taper to a point at the base of the basket. The adjacent towers touch at just these points in the repetition around the basket. The arms at waist height and across the top resemble old-fashioned railway bridges, a slender trapezoid zigzagged by struts. A line of the same dark brown as the towers encircles the base at the edge, and another medium brown line encircles the brim. A narrow fabric strip, like the inner band of a hat, has been hand-stitched lightly just inside. From the artist's bio, Joe Federson, Okanagan and Arrow Lakes, explores indigenous landscapes and icons and the complex relationship between contemporary and native symbolism. He creates artworks in an array of mediums, including painting, printmaking, photography, collage, and works in glass. He is a member of the Confederated Tribes of the Colville Reservation. Number 4, Mourner by Jessica Jackson Hutchins. A sprawling, unframed painted canvas drapes like a tablecloth over a long and steeply tilted tabletop, or a coffin-shaped box, atop a central V-shaped structure. Sloping 45 degrees to the floor where the hem touches it, the canvas has been trimmed to curve gently around it, and it flares out slightly. At the 6.5-foot-tall high end, the canvas hangs in the air like the heel of a shoe in stride or a high-heeled pump. A knotted and tasseled ceiling hanger for a houseplant lies flopped across the top around where laces or a ribbon would go. Higher up is a droopy, wide-bottomed ceramic vase shaped a little like an African gourd squash, white, with a few broad black strokes that cross in places. The canvas is an earthy mix of dark and light, broadly brushed and washed on in a succession of thin layers in sections that vary in brightness and overall tint from one end to the other. A blue-tinged central brightening evokes the sky above and between buildings in a city, cut-out photos of which appear in collage in the bottom margin. Other collages appear elsewhere. A disorienting realization soon occurs that there is actually neither a table or box beneath the canvas, but only an upside-down and oddly folded collapsible aluminum ladder. Where the struts of the V disappear behind the canvas, a narrow brushed outline appears to show their extension and the zigzag course they take behind it, like an x-ray. The piece teeters and tilts atop the central hinge of the ladder where the V legs come to a soft point. The x-ray shows the legs extend straight to the canvas tabletop and there turn sharply up the ramp on one side and down it on the other. A subtle sag over the V shows there is indeed nothing beneath the canvas but the ladder. The legs are incompletely extended, and each leg is a final segment folded out of the way beneath it. Besides the x-ray of the hidden parts, there also floats a life-size portrait of the exposed V in the sky-like central section directly above it. Effectively pointing to its subject, it seems a guide to realization. From the artist's bio, Jessica Jackson Hutchins produces sculptural installations, assemblages, paintings, and large-scale ceramics that often transform everyday household objects. Her work has been incorporated into public collections, including the Museum of Modern Art New York, the San Francisco Museum of Modern Art San Francisco, the Museum of Contemporary Art Chicago, the Brooklyn Museum New York, the Hammer Museum Los Angeles, the Margulies Collection Miami, and the Portland Art Museum Portland. Here are all 17 artists listed in alphabetical order. Brian Beck, Marita Dingus, Warren Dykman, Joe Federson, Galen Hansen, Andrea Joyce Heimer, Sky Hopinka, Denzel Hurley, Jessica Jackson Hutchins, D.E. May, Jeffrey Mitchell, Blair Saxon Hill, Vince Skelly, Whiting Tennis, Cappy Thompson, Joey Veltkamp, and Mary Welcome. Thank you so much for visiting the Museum of Craft and Design. You can also check out an audio tour for the Mr. Roboto exhibition, both online and on-site. That exhibition is up through June 30th, 2024 as well. We hope you enjoyed the artwork and that you'll visit us again. This guide was written by Cheryl Green and Oliver Baker and narrated by Cheryl Green. Blind QC, script quality control by Nefertiti Matos Olivares and Rick Hammond. Produced by Social Audio Description Collective.